Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Bronwyn and Franz Diener of the International House of Reiki. Bronwyn and Franz teach Reiki around the globe and are the authors of the Reiki Sourcebook, the Japanese Art of Reiki, the Reiki Techniques card deck, and the soon-to-be-released A to Z of Reiki. The music you are listening to, Reiki Khan, is available at the International House of Reiki website, www.reiki.net.au. My name's Bronwyn.
And my name is Franz.
And today we have Pamela Miles with us, and Pamela is going to talk about Reiki and medicine. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you so much.
Pamela, the first thing we'd like to know from you is a little bit about yourself, actually. I understand you teach Reiki, and my guess is that you're working in a medical environment of some sort.
I do teach Reiki. I also have a clinical practice, and I do quite a bit of writing, and I also work in medical and healthcare environments in a number of different ways. I've been practicing Reiki for almost 20 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, it took me a while to really get the hang of it. No, I'm joking.
So now, you've got the hang of it?
I'm starting to get the hang of it now. Reiki is so subtle. You know, it's so simple on the outside, and it's so subtle that I think it's often underestimated in how profound it is. So when I say I'm just beginning to get the hang of it after 20 years, you know, for me, it's been a continually unfolding experience, and the simplicity of my outer practice has really enabled that to happen. But, you know, I had been practicing meditation and yoga for 20 years before I even experienced Reiki. So I'm sure that is a lot of what's behind my experience of Reiki, you know, in my particular understanding and perspective of it. And some people may think it ironic or paradoxical that having come from such a strong spiritual background, and I still have very strong daily spiritual practice as well as Reiki, that I would wind up being so active in the medical community, because many times people think that spirituality and medical science don't have a lot to do with each other.
You have a background in science as well?
Not particularly. I mean, I have a couple of undergraduate degrees, and I did do research as an undergraduate, but I didn't go to medical school, and I don't have any medical credentials. So that's another part of what's so unusual about the work I do in the medical community, is that I don't have any of the academic education that would normally be needed to give me entree there.
So what are you doing in the medical environment?
What I do is I do presentations in hospitals and medical schools and other healthcare environments, you know, things like grand rounds. I speak at medical conferences, and, you know, these are things that one has to be invited to do. I publish articles in peer-reviewed medical journals, and again, this is something that has to pass a peer review process. You know, when you publish in a medical journal, you write your article, and then at least two medical professionals, usually physicians, read it and critique it. And you have to be able to satisfy their critiques before it's passed to be published, because medical journals are a primary way that the medical community stays updated in the field. So they have to be very clear that this that the author, the writer, doesn't have license to just say whatever she wants to say. You know, everything has to be documented. And so it's that process of documentation and critical thinking that has been an important part of my success in collaborating with medicine, and that's something that I can really trace back to not only my academic education, but even more so to my spiritual practice.
So you learnt experientially, is what you're saying, and that gave you the knowledge to be able to move into that field.
Well, I learned experientially, but I also learned how to apply critical thinking to my experiences, because we have subtle experiences, say in meditation or when doing a Reiki treatment on ourselves or someone else. You know, we have these subtle experiences, but then we need to distill them with our refined intellect so that we're not just going off on a fantasy or a delusion. You know, when we're experiencing things on the subtle levels, we don't have the guidelines that we do in outer reality. You know, we can't measure something. The question of, is this really real, becomes much more difficult to answer.
Yeah, I can see that. And so you use as well specific tools for that to help you to stay, in one way, stay really grounded.
Yes. Being able to stay grounded and understanding that staying grounded is a discipline. You know, it's not something that just automatically happens. It's something that we continually assert that awareness to maintain that groundedness as we practice. And I think that that's a lot of what medical professionals see and what has made Reiki appealing to them.
Yeah, I think probably in your case that they see a grounded person practicing a technique called Reiki or a spiritual practice who is not off with the fairies but can actually really talk about it in medical kind of terms.
And also who is strong enough in the practice that I'm not trying to jam it down their throats. You know, I'm able to just put it out. My experience, the theory, the little bit of the history, and the research, how Reiki's being used in clinical medicine, both in institutions and privately by physicians and healthcare workers, and then let them connect the dots, you know, because researchers are used to using their minds to figure things out. You know, this is how they refine their knowledge base. Even when a research paper is published, doctors don't just say, okay, well, now we know that. They look at it, they examine it, because there might be a weakness in the study design, you know, or in the interpretation. So in a sense, it's very much like the Tibetan Buddhist tradition of debate, you know, where one person says something and then they're questioned. And I love that about the scientific process. And that is, you know, very similar to how I've been trained in my spiritual practice. Like Einstein supposedly said, you know, question everything. But at the same time, being willing to find your grounding in your inner reality. It's tricky stuff.
Yeah. You know what I'd like is for you to be able to tell us what you think Reiki is in terminology that you would use working with people in a medical environment. I think that's a really helpful thing for people to see what sort of language you would use to explain Reiki.
I can tell you very simply what I say to everyone, whether it's a medical professional or a prospective student, is that Reiki is a spiritual healing practice. That's my personal definition of Reiki in a nutshell. And on my website, I have made the medical papers that I've written and some that have been written by students of mine available to the public so that they can download them. And this is really important for people to know, because these are papers that the public would not be able to access otherwise, because they just don't have a way of getting to the medical journals unless they know how to do this kind of library research. And so for Reiki professionals who want to go more in depth, they can download these papers and study them. For people who are interested in using Reiki as part of their healthcare, they can download these papers and hand them to their doctors, because it speaks the language that doctors need. And there are two in particular that are important. One is the Reiki review of a biofield therapy, and that addresses the academic aspects. And then there is another interview that the same medical journal, Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine, did with me, and that gave me an opportunity to speak as a clinician and an advocate to Reiki. So those two papers together give very strong support to anyone who either wants to prepare herself, you know, to work in a medical environment, or to a layperson who wants to communicate the value of Reiki to a physician. And then, in many ways, the same material is available in my book, Reiki, A Comprehensive Guide, but there it's written for the layperson.
Would you say that Reiki is compatible with Western medicine, for example?
Absolutely. You know, I think of Reiki as a complementary therapy. I mean, besides the fact that for me Reiki is always a spiritual healing practice, it's a spiritual healing practice that can function as a complementary therapy or a medical intervention in that sense, and it is completely compatible with medicine, either conventional medicine or any of the non-conventional approaches such as acupuncture or shiatsu or herbalism, because Reiki as a spiritual healing practice is balancing. So whatever else is happening, whether it's surgery or side effects of pharmaceuticals or trauma, Reiki will just gently encourage the person's overall system back towards his unique balance point. And that's not going to interfere with anything else that is being done medically. And what it will do is strengthen the patient's system so that they're able to go through the medical interventions, which can sometimes be grueling, like bone marrow biopsies or chemotherapy. You know, some protocols are very hard on the body, and enable the patient to get the best effect from their medical interventions.
And are there any contraindications, do you feel, with Reiki?
No, there are no known medical contraindications. And again, I would go back to what Reiki does. It gently encourages the system towards balance. So what could be the problem there? You know, we don't see people being pathologically balanced, right? You know, you move towards your place of balance, and then if you get unbalanced and you do Reiki, you move back towards balance. But once you're balanced, that's a place where you hang out for a while. You know, it doesn't keep increasing beyond the norm. It stabilizes at your norm. So in medicine, you know, this idea of contraindications has come up because in medical science, in order to be able to help, you have to have the power to hurt. Medical interventions are one-directional. They move the blood sugar this way, or they move something that way, whereas Reiki acts as what in herbalism is sometimes called an adaptogen. So I would say Reiki is like a vibrational adaptogen. It helps the body adapt to stress. It helps the body, mind, and spirit adapt to stress and reconnect with its balance point. And also with Reiki, we have the intelligence of the universe. So Reiki knows the big picture. If someone has a fracture, for example, this is a common, I'm going to call it a myth, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful sense to anyone who feels strongly about this, but sometimes students ask me, well, I've been told not to give Reiki to a broken bone before it's set. I have never, ever heard of an occasion where a bone has healed out of alignment because Reiki was given to it. What I have heard is that the patient experienced less swelling, less pain, stayed calmer, which means that there are less stress hormones in the bloodstream, so that by the time the person got to the orthopedist, it was easier for the doctor to set the bone. You know, there's a lot of healing that needs to be done when there's a fracture besides just the bone mending. Reiki can balance that, can, you know, address those other levels of healing.
What other myths? I think that's a very helpful topic, actually, because I think there are a lot of myths out there about Reiki. What other myths have you come across?
Well, another one that I've heard is not to use Reiki during anesthesia. And again, you know, I have to say, oops, because I have performed Reiki in the OR during surgery, during open heart surgery, during heart transplantations. And what I see in the OR is that there are anesthesiologists there all the time. They usually work in teams of two, and they're constantly monitoring the patient's health and the patient's need for anesthesia. So if it's possible that Reiki affects the patient's need for anesthesia, the anesthesiologist would be able to correct for that right away. But I'm not saying that it even makes sense to me that Reiki would alter the need for anesthesia.
Yeah, I can really see that, because, I mean, it's again about the balance. It's about healing, and it's not about altering something.
Yeah, you know, I think Reiki sometimes can help people need less medication. I have certainly seen that diabetics have been able to reduce their medication once they've started using Reiki on themselves or receiving treatment from someone else or a combination of both. But diabetics are monitoring their need for medication constantly anyway. A lot of times people need less pain medication, or I've even seen people need no pain medication when they were using Reiki. But that's not life-threatening, you know, that they use less pain medication. That's actually a good thing. We want to use pain medication when it's needed, because yes, people do not heal well when they're in pain. But anything that we can do to safely minimize medications is, you know, generally recognized as a good thing in medicine.
Mm. Another myth I remember hearing was about pacemakers. And yet I know lots of Reiki practitioners who work with people who have pacemakers.
Yeah. You know, the energy, the electricity in a pacemaker is so much grosser than the level at which Reiki operates. Reiki is the most subtle vibrational underpinning of reality as we know it. So we're not worried about using Reiki around electrical appliances, are we? I mean, we would use Reiki and listen to our headphones at the same time, and that could be quite a nice experience, actually. So if a practitioner, of course, and I do want to underline this, if a practitioner is having any kind of negative experience in any of these situations, we want to use our common sense and stop. But we also want to take a look, because chances are it's not Reiki. I mean, there are people who can do all kinds of interesting things with their minds, like Uri Geller bending spoons. And if someone like that learned Reiki and, you know, started giving a Reiki treatment, we don't know what else is happening besides Reiki there, and maybe it could affect the pacemaker. My concern is that many people who say or and believe, because I don't think anyone's being deceptive about this, that they're doing Reiki, are really doing a lot of other things as well. They're not staying with the simplicity of the practice, which is really very passive. And so as soon as one engages the mind and starts doing, you know, some form of, let's say, intentional healing, or engages the will to heal, then we can't attribute the effects to Reiki. And I would suspect that when there are any kind of adverse events, that the practitioner is probably either emotionally connected to the person who's being treated, which can bring in a whole bunch of other things happening, or is not disciplined to simply stay in that passive role of a Reiki practitioner.
Basically, you would say that Reiki is a safe practice.
Yes, I think Reiki is safe at any time for anyone of any age, any level of health, and we always want to use our common sense. So I never encourage people to rely solely on Reiki, but to think of Reiki first, because that will help them assess the situation and know what else they need. So that may mean having one hand either on oneself or on a person who's been injured while you dial the medics with your other hand.
Absolutely. The intent needs to be clear and right. It's such a simple system, and often our intent takes a little journey by itself, but if we can keep our intent very clear and simple, then as well Reiki is really kind of clean and pure.
And I find that that happens more often with people who don't really practice Reiki on its own for I'm going to say a significant amount of time, and I don't just mean doing long Reiki sessions. I mean over years.
Yeah.
You know, because it's that amount of practice that is necessary for people to gain conviction in what is possible with Reiki. And as we gain that conviction, we trust our practice more, and we let go of subtle levels of efforting that we may not even be aware of. And it's in those subtle levels of efforting that we can run into trouble, or we can inadvertently create an adverse event.
Is it possible to compare the efficacy of Reiki to conventional Western medicine?
You know, I would have to say no, that's not something that is probably doable, and I don't think it's even worth pursuing as a broad question. However, in specific, in very clearly defined arenas, like, for example, Reiki to relieve anxiety, then a question like that may be addressed scientifically in a tightly designed research study, because what we're seeing with just that question is that a 20-minute session of Reiki can make a significant difference in a person's experience of anxiety. And if we can see that people can get faster results from Reiki than from medication, then that may be good information for people to have, particularly for patients who are already on other medications, you know, where there's a real concern about adding something else. But in general, is, you know, comparing the efficacy of Reiki to the efficacy of conventional medicine, each of them are just such broad topics, and Reiki in particular has such profound long-range benefits that maybe can never be documented by research. So why try? You know, I think that can just muddy the waters. The question is really, how can Reiki facilitate the delivery and strengthen the effectiveness of conventional medicine, rather than putting them in opposition to one another. But let's see how by adding Reiki, we can create a more integrative practice of medicine that will be less invasive and have better results. Conventional technology can be very expeditious. And once you add Reiki to any treatment protocol, you've got a holistic healing situation. No matter how invasive the medical intervention may be, you know, even in a heart transplantation, what could be more invasive than taking a heart out of a body and putting another one in? But when Reiki is there, every aspect of functioning is being addressed, not just for the patient, but in my experience, you know, we say we're giving Reiki treatment to the patient, but Reiki is filling the entire OR. And it's affecting the clarity and the functioning of the surgeons as well. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, how does the team in the OR look upon Reiki? Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
You know, I always want to caution people against generalizations. I mean, all of us are opposed to racism, for example. And yet I see a certain kind of racism in the attitude of a lot of people in healing traditions towards the medical profession. You know, it's not us and them. The medical profession is composed of people. And these people, especially in this day and age, I don't know, you know, what it's like in other countries, but it's no longer guaranteed financial success to be a physician in the United States. So people become doctors, they go through grueling training because they want to be of help. You know, they want to be able to contribute. And they all bring to that desire their own personalities and their own backgrounds. And what I found when I started working in medical environments in like the early to mid-90s was that there's tremendous interest in complementary therapies in conventional medicine. And, you know, I live and work in New York City, and this is really a bastion of the medical establishment. So there's a lot of pressure on medical professionals to be very conventional. But that said, the medical profession is still composed of individuals, and these are largely clinicians, people who are taking care of other people. Doctors see an enormous amount of suffering every day. And when they see something that can ease that suffering and it's not dangerous, my experience is that they're very interested. And they become less concerned about the fact that they don't understand exactly how and why it works. Their greatest concern is for their patient's well-being. And that translates into a concern about safety. So with Reiki, there is no concern about safety. And then they see patients getting better outcomes, medical outcomes than would be expected. And also in the very short term, they see patients whose pain is relieved, whose suffering is relieved. Doctors like that.
I agree with you, because a doctor or the Reiki practitioner or the nurse, they all come from the same perspective of they want to help. They just use a different tool. And one person might use Reiki, the other person might use a medical tool or some medicine. They still want to help a fellow human being.
So I always come from the perspective of looking for what we have in common, Franz, you know? And when we see what we have in common, as you just stated, wanting to help, then it's easy to go from that base to, all right, how do we collaborate together here? And as a Reiki professional working in medical environments, you know, I'm the foreigner. This is their turf, and they have invited me in. So I bring all the respect and gratitude that I would if I were visiting somebody's home in another country. you know, and I look to see, well, how are things done here, and how can I move into the situation that they already have in place? I'm not looking to see how I can change the situation or what I can teach them. I'm looking to see how I can support them. And that makes for a much better relationship.
As well, a much more natural relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's really Reiki mind. You know, in my experience of Reiki, I never see Reiki jumping out and pushing other things aside. You know, it always moves in, even at its most dramatic, it moves in rather quietly. Reiki is very content to let someone else have the spotlight. That person can be a surgeon or a psychotherapist or a trauma worker. You know, and when Reiki is added to the situation, it uplifts everyone, including the professional caregiver.
Pamela, maybe before we completely finish, if you could tell us your website and the name of your book again.
Sure. The website is reikiinmedicine.org, and that's in IN. Sometimes people think it's and, but it's in. And the book is Reiki, A Comprehensive Guide, and it's published by Tarcher Penguin. And it's really the first crossover book, Franz. You know, it's the first book that's being written with the public in mind, and which I wrote, as always, you know, realizing I wanted to reach a level of credibility in case a doctor picks this up. I wanted to have a book that a physician whose family member was sick or who herself had become a patient could look at and read about Reiki, and that it would speak to them not in medical language so much, but with a clarity and without any assumptions.
Thank you once again, Pamela.
Thank you, both of you.